Well, hello there. Welcome to Our Rich Land, a podcast of Richland Soil and Water Conservation District, where we explore the outstanding efforts to improve, protect, and conserve our natural world right here in Richland County, Ohio. My name is Evan.
And my name is Josh Steffen. In today's episode, we welcome Kathy Smith, who is OSU's forestry program coordinator. Say that several times fast. Whew. And according to the script here, an expert on all things woodland. All things, Kathy. And so if you want to learn more about maple syrup production and how it tastes with french fries, it says how it relates to effective woodland management, you're in the right place.
So, how you doing, Josh?
I'm doing great, Evan. How are you?
Good. How are things at Kingwood?
Hey, I'm slightly cold, but people are coming for Christmas lights, so what can I say? Not that that dates this particular podcast that's going to be airing in the future.
Could be in the spring sometime.
It could be in the spring, so you're not going to care about Christmas lights.
Well, we'd like to welcome today Kathy Smith, who is the Forestry Program Director at The Ohio State University Extension. With the OSU School of Environment and Natural Resources. Good so far?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good. All right. She's got a bachelor's degree in forest resource management and a master's in natural resource management, both from The Ohio State University. Kathy was a watershed forester for the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, Division of Forestry, for 11 years following her degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2001, she took up her current spot in OSU Extension, first as a Extension Associate, right? And then later became the Program Director of the Ohio Woodland Stewards Program. In this role, she coordinates, promotes, and educates Ohio's many woodland owners and resource professionals.
Okay, and pause. I got to ask the question, what the heck is a watershed forester? Because that was a new one to me.
So when I was hired, in West Central Ohio, a lot of soil and water districts chipped in for my position because they were starting Indian Lake Watershed, Mad River Watershed, and they wanted a forester to work with farmers to encourage tree planting along the streams and rivers and stuff. So I was the first one at DNR. We ended up hiring a second one, and we kind of split the state in half.
Oh, well, that's no pressure then.
Yeah, no pressure. Yeah, you get the covered. Eastern half. Yeah. Kathy gets the Western half.
You got it all covered.
So it really was working closely with the watershed project so that if they went after grant money and that, we had funds to promote riparian buffer tree planting.
Now back to our regularly scheduled scripts.
Yeah, more on Kathy. She's an expert in a long list of things, including woodland and riparian woodland management, tree planting, and timber marketing, along with some other things. A few of Kathy's feature presentations include forest ecology and management and controlling undesirable trees, shrubs, and vines. She probably knows those pretty well. Maybe can talk about them in her sleep.
Probably.
She actually does, I'm sure.
And then Kathy's also heavily invested in forestry organizations across the state, including sitting on several boards, including the Ohio chapter of the Society of American Foresters, ODNR Forestry, or Forest Advisory Council, OSU's Gwynn Conservation Area. And I would assume especially likes to take lots of walks in the woods, educating both students and community members in the woods behind OSU Mansfield, where she grew up right around the corner. And currently resides in the Lexington area. So she is a Richland County native. Mm-hmm. Welcome, Kathy.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. It's the first really cold day we've had in a while. So if you're thinking maple, you're thinking maybe we're going to have the freezing and thawing we need to get sap to flow, but Mother Nature still has a ways to go.
Can you do it in the, I know as it's on its way down, can you get syrup, you know, as it's going back into the, feeding back in the roots?
So what you want is, it's the pressure that pushes it out the tap holes.
The osmotic pressure.
Yeah. So you want days in like the 50s, and you want to go below freezing at night. And as the temperature starts to drop, so does the run of sap. Gotcha. And so, yeah, you want it when it's full-blown pressure and pushing up through the trees.
Especially if you've got heater lines and all those kind of things off it. Yeah.
Yeah, which is what we have at Mansfield. We have the tubing with a vacuum pump, actually, that pulls it out of the tree.
Sort of like cheating, don't you think?
I mean, I don't have time to wait for you. Just,
that's right.
Come on.
Come on. Stick another tap in and away we go.
That's right.
So I'm not quite sure I understand the freeze-thaw again. So it takes a hard winter with a freeze, and then the thaw is what creates the pressure?
Right. So you need temperatures below freezing, but then the next day the temperatures need to go upwards into the high 40s, 50, so that that warmth creates the pressure in the tree. And then, as I said, as the temperature starts to drop, so too will the amount of sap that's coming out of the tree, because it's kind of like the pressure is dissipating with the colder temperatures. Things are starting to freeze again.
Okay.
And so you want that freeze thaw to force that sap up out of the trees.
So you need that quick, like 30 degree rise. That's why.
That's ideal.
Is the time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if we have a week, let's say here, that we're below freezing, and then next week we're still below freezing at night, but during the day we get upwards, you could start seeing a run. And in past years, we have had some producers start tapping in late December. Some of them make jokes about Christmas, but yeah.
I didn't realize that that was an option. I thought it just, it was always a
February. So it depends on which producers you talk to. Some of
the
them
sly
are,
ones.
Some of them are pretty adamant about a date. You know, mid-February is don't tap before then. And then there are some that have had huge runs when they tap late December, early January. But you always run the risk of having a warming period in there where nothing's running. You really shouldn't retap the tree. So you have to hope it's not a long period that things don't run.
All those risks.
There's all those risks.
Yep. Here, when I was doing research for this podcast, I don't know if it was an OSU site, they talked about walnut syrup. I was like, what? What?
From different trees.
Yeah, from the walnut tree, oddly enough. I didn't even know that that was really an option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you pretty much make syrup out of any hardwood tree?
No, I wouldn't say all of them, but walnut, sycamore, birch, hickory, those are probably the key ones.
What is it? Is it a certain sugar content that makes it clear, that makes that, or that, what, like, what's the characteristic that other than it bleeds?
Some of it is just literally the taste. I mean, you can, all trees have sap with a sugar content. You might have to boil more for some than others. But then you have to get down to the taste. I've not tasted walnut, but I have had sycamore. Sycamore is very nutty and dark.
Really?
And
it's
then
just the mixture of metabolites that are coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's the different nutrients and stuff that's in the tree that gives it a little bit different. For me, birch
doesn't do anything.
Doesn't do anything. I don't particularly care for it. It's almost no taste for me, but that, you know, taste buds differ. But I've had sycamore, and I've had sycamore with some regular maple blended in. And with the blend, you lose some of the bitterness of the nutty flavor from just the straight sycamore. But they're both great.
Huh. Never knew.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool.
Don't. And all those who are in the maple syrup industry, this will be stricken from the record. No one will know. You still have the corner on the syrup market.
And we do have a webinar on our Woodland Stewards website.
Maybe that's where I came across it.
Yeah, where Mike Reckland talked about their research into walnut.
Gotcha.
Could you talk about some of the research you've done with students at OSU Mansfield, and I guess North Central State? Have you done work? those two?
So we haven't had a North Central State connection yet.
Oh, okay.
We're still fairly new at this. We just interviewed our students for the year and have a couple, probably three, coming in to work during spring semester, which will encompass most of the
season.
How many
students usually?
So typically we have three. We might end up with five this year because we had some really interesting ones that we felt like fit really well with the program. We actually hired a full-time for spring semester person who has done some research on maple elsewhere, and she's going to work for us this spring semester. So it's a mix of students and then that one permanent kind of grad student type position. So our first year was 2019, and that really was the year we installed the tubing. And it was like, we got to get this in, we got to get this done, and so we weren't doing anything over and above just trying to get 1,100 taps in the trees, tubing run, and then collect some syrup, sap.
So describe for all of us maple syrup neophytes. Or you could say macrophyte, but that's getting the botany nerd humor for those who have no idea what we're
talking
about.
Yes, it is.
For us, there are sporophytes at this. What? Walk us through a couple of questions. One, the basic process. We're probably all sort of familiar with it, more of this drill, spigot, and bucket thing.
Mm-hmm.
But and then before you had is. More recently, I was too ignorant. I thought it was just sugar maples.
Mm-mm.
And what species of maples do you focus on? Anything? I mean, Norways. I mean, you get anything you can possibly get in there, or and so what maples? And then what's your basic process to set up from from selection of tree to getting it a final product in the bottle?
So Norways, I'm gonna hit that one first and knock it off the table, so to speak.
They're bad guys, folks.
They are bad guys. And in true maple country like Vermont and New Hampshire, they're starting to push out the traditional sugar maples. So it's considered a heavy-duty invasive species up there. We don't see as much of it here, but I definitely have seen it in the woods. So it's one I don't usually encourage folks unless it's in your yard and you want to tap your yard.
And it's
tree.
In everybody's yard.
Yes, it is.
Everybody has a Norway maple, it seems like.
So in our woods, we've got 19 acres, and we have a mix of about 60% sugar. And then the other is red and a red-silver hybrid, which is basically Acer Freemani if you buy it out of the nursery.
Okay.
And it's a naturally occurring hybrid. And so that leads us to some of the research we're doing, because when we first calculated what kind of sugar content should be coming out of the woods when we were going to do this, we were like thinking 1.8, 1.9% sugar content. And the first year we ran, we were at like 2.4, 2.5.
And wow. Is that too high?
It's high. Sugar maple usually runs, in the twos, the low twos. So the fact that we had 40% that were red and this red silver that should have brought that down and it didn't, we were, so what's the deal with the red-silver hybrids? And that actually led us into the first research project that we're working on, is the genetics of those red-silver crosses. As I said, red-silver is a native cross, which has been taken into the nursery industry as the Freemanis. And it's, great growth. But you're right, there's a lot of folks that have not tapped them. I mean, I still talk to producers and like, yeah, I got those, but I'm not going to worry about them. But year two, where we were tracking stuff, we were still above 2% sugar content overall with all the sap we were collecting. So we have, if you walk into the woods today, well, not today, they're not up yet, but they will be soon.
Metaphorically speaking.
Yes. we have white canisters that look like rocket launchers sitting in racks in the woods that are attached to 75 different trees that we took offline.
Okay.
And what we're doing is their sap comes into this PVC pipe that we empty, we weigh, and we check the sugar content. and we'll do that for 3 years. And it's a mix of sugars and then these red and red silver crosses.
Okay.
We've also taken leaf material off these trees and taken them over to the researchers at our Worcester campus, and they're looking at the genetics of these trees. So we'll match that genetic link with what's coming out of the trees.
Sample.
Yeah. And okay. So what we know is the red silver crosses put out usually a boatload of sap.
Mm-hmm.
Typically more than some of our sugars are running.
Which wouldn't surprise me, since I would assume those are much faster growers than the sugars. Sugars tend
right.
to be slower,
right.
moderate growers.
So, you know, we'll see what we come to. There's some researchers in Vermont that are also looking at the reds, and we're starting to work with them on what they're seeing and what we're seeing in ours. And so it's the very beginning. So 2022 will be our fourth season. And we have one more year then on that. And we've got I'm keeping track of growing degree days because that's part of our climate change.
And what's the growing degree days for those who are not
so
familiar with the term?
It's those days, it's the days that it takes for different species of plant mm-hmm. to start to bloom. And for maples, what you do not want to have happen is for them to start budding out because it ruins the sap. You get a very bitter, buddy syrup that you can't sell. So for us, it's critical to track our reds and our silvers, because the silvers are going to bud out first. So we're following the growing degree days and then tracking the buds on the trees to make certain that it...
At what point in the bud process?
Right.
Bud breaking.
So I will say that this year, we had our red silvers really start to bud out, but our sugars were still pretty solid. Mm. We actually have majority of our red silvers on a couple of main lines. And so we just shut those main lines down and kept collecting sap from the sugars that were on the other main lines.
So it's almost like what that nice mix is. You get a longer window
mm-hmm.
for collecting. And I could see from what I've read, sugars may not make it through climate change quite as healthily as
right.
red, while silver, nothing can destroy silver except for nuclear explosions, apparently. But.
Well, and the thing is, we don't have any pure silver. I have yet to find a parent silver maple on campus in the 600 acres of woods that we have. As much as I've walked through, I've found some that look like they probably came from a parent tree that are much more silver, but I cannot find, have not been able to find a large mature tree that we think is the parent material for a lot of this. So that's why the genetics are so interesting on mm-hmm. them.
I was like, come to my childhood backyard if you want a nice mature silver maple. That's all I had was silver
yeah.
maples. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. We'll get right back to the episode in just a second, but wanted to let you know that during this next segment, we got some nasty feedback on Josh's microphone. We had to cut it out and rely on other mics in the room to pick up his voice, but he's still audible.
Unfortunately. For everyone involved.
So sorry for the technical difficulties, but the show must go on.
So process. So you select the tree. You then, how do you tap? What kind of tools do you use to usually tap with?
So we have cordless drills, like 18 volt, 20 volt drills, and
How big of a hole?
A specific bit.
Okay.
For tapping, there's tapping bits that we use, and it depends on what size material. So there's like 3/16 line, 5/16 line. But your spiles are pretty much going to go in the same size hole no matter.
That's the spigot that goes in the hole.
That's the spigot that goes different kinds, different colors.
Ooh.
And so you're using this bit that you only want to go in like an inch and a half.
And that's just to give you some anchoring?
That opens the hole in, you tap that spile, and then out the tube comes a sap.
Now, for all those botany sporophytes out there, what tissue is the sap coming from?
So you're coming out of the cambium, the live tissue area. Mm-hmm. The problem is, If you go too deep, you end up into heartwood and dead that's not going to be conducting. So you want to stay in the live tissue.
Is that the green, like if you were to scratch the bark off, is that the green stuff you find?
Yeah, but you're going to go a little deeper. Mm-hmm. So you're going to go into the behind the outer bark and into that conductive tissue of the cambium.
And just let it flow them.
That's
a pun for all those sporophytes out there. Phloem is the live tissue that allows the...
Between the phloem and the xylem.
Yep. Yes. And the xylem is what we think of as wood. That's just water conducting tissue. It's a kind of a one-way street up from the roots to the leaves, but the phloem goes everywhere. So there's a good science lesson. So spiles in, and then what?
So by the time, we have main lines run. We have 6 main lines that are in the woods. They stay up all year round.
Okay.
And so do the lines that we tap with. There's saddles, so it's like you pull the spile out of the tree and you're going to sanitize it, and then you're going to sit that spile in a saddle on the main line. So when it comes time to tap, you're going to take your drill out to the woods, you're going to drill, and you're going to pull the spile.
You don't have to reel or run the line.
Right. You're going to replace spiles. You're going to eventually replace the drops, which is the tube between the main line and the spile. And you have to sanitize them because you can't leave the bacteria in there all summer.
Do you put a new hole or
in the tree?
Yeah.
Yes. So most of us create a pattern so that you're not tapping on top of wood that has already been tapped. So our rule of thumb is either up 6 and over 3 or down 6 and over 3. And sometimes what dictates that is the length of the tubing that you have left, because you've cut off,
real world.
Yeah,
there.
It's like, will it reach here? Well, it'll reach if I go down and over, but it won't reach if I go up and over. But you want to do that so that by the time you come back around the tree, those holes will have closed, and most of them should close within the first year. And if they're not closing within that first year, the tree probably isn't quite as healthy as you.
Vigorous growth.
Yeah, yeah. You want that tap hole closed. But, of course, that then creates the, so where was last year's tap hole? Oh, there it is. And now, you want a pattern like that. The numbers can be different, but you want to get away from any wood that's been impacted by the spile so you're not tapping on top of.
Why is it critical to get away from that?
Because you want the tree to be able to have some time to recuperate. And sometimes, depending on how good you are at tapping, you can end up with a split there that creates more damage to the tree that you really want to then stay away from, because you don't want to over-injure the tree into some kind of scenario there that opens it up to other problems.
So you run the lines, it starts flowing, you collect it, and what does all the lines come into?
So we have a small shed in the woods that has the vacuum pump in it. So we have 6 main lines. They're all connected to the vacuum pump, pulls it in to a releaser that sits in there. You can kind of watch it. It fills with sap. And when it hits a certain point, it pushes it out to the parking lot where we have a 2,400-gallon stainless steel tank.
Wow.
So we buried...
You fill that thing?
Oh, there's times when our guy that boils for us is over 3 times a day to empty that tank.
You're kidding me.
No.
Wow.
No. This past year, it was a shorter season. We probably pulled in about 15,000 gallons of sap. I think the year before, we were right around 18,000. And so we buried our main line out to the tank this past year because we were having issues. We were holding it up in the air and it would freeze. And then you would have to wait for it to unfreeze before the shed could pump anything out, which was creating quite a backup. So we buried it. It's like 3 feet in the ground and comes up at the sap tank and goes in.
There you go. There's innovation. Okay. So it's boiled down.
So we have a producer we work with who comes and picks it up 1,000 gallons at a time. And he takes it back and boils it and bottles it for us.
Okay. Cool. Well, thanks for walking us through that.
Sure.
And that 15,000, 18,000 gallons, how many individual trees does that all come from?
So what I can tell you is we have 1,100 taps, and most trees have one or two taps. So, you know, we're probably in that 700. There's 75 trees that Gabe took offline to do his research canisters. And, you know, probably number of trees is somewhere in that 700-800, I would bet. Because a lot of our trees just have one tap, but we do have a few that have two, and I don't know that we have any that have three, because they're still fairly small-sized trees.
Gotcha. So do you know off the top of your head how much one tree produces in a season, gallons-wise?
So we haven't been tracking that until Gabe did this research, and what we've learned, and I don't have the numbers in my head, but what we've learned is some of them just gush sap. I mean, it's more than what the canisters can really hold at times. And then other ones, it's just a trickle. And we also know that our sugar content varies greatly from tree to tree.
Even trees that are like right next to each other.
Mm-hmm. So we have one sugar maple that this first year of the research project produced 8% sugar content all season long. Now, the interesting thing is going to be, is it going to do that again this year? Was that a fluke of last year's season, or what was it? So we'll keep an eye on that one, because that's definitely a...
So has there any research that's been done about previous indicators from previous season, whether it's a total rainfall, you know, in terms of climate fluctuations, soil type, what factors can you kind of look over the season, right? All of those photosynthates are going, you know, into the ground, right? That's product from last year coming back up to get the buds going, the energy. That can give, you know, researchers and let all everybody in the industry know, yep, we should be expecting a good season.
You can't, because it's temperature driven. So it was like this year we were tapping when there was snow on the ground in late February. But then we hit 50 degree days in that first 10 days of March, and everything gets shut down because stuff starts budding out. Mm. So it was a very short season, even with all the snow on the ground, which would have been the extra moisture that, you know, a lot of folks were talking, well, we're a little dry. Well, there was a good 10 inches on the ground when we were
tapping. So the more moisture in the soil that's free and that's locked up, and it helps with,
I think it helps with the health of the trees, you know, so they're not so stressed.
Yeah.
And that's what you're trying to avoid. But like I said, this year, now some folks this year had a super season. Ours was incredibly short.
Okay.
So even around the state, it varies a lot. And we're actually, so not only am I tracking growing degree days in our woods, we're using the Ohio State's phenology calendar to do the growing degree days,
which is excellent, by the way.
It's an awesome tool, and to track zip codes of other producers and trying to see, you know, there's a little pocket up here that had less, and seeing how that all relates with the climate stuff. We still have a lot of climate questions, I think, answer.
I bet.
So we can kind of wrap the maple syrup section off with what does it have to do with effective woodland management, and then what is that? Why do you think it's a good fit for North Central Ohio, specifically Richland County? And then we'll talk about like what fuels your fire about maple syrup and woodland management, or you can just lump it all into one,
or just talk about Las Vegas. If you don't want to talk about this at all, you can go in a totally different direction.
Or that trip to Alaska.
Yeah, we'll talk
about that. So as a forester and spending the first 11 years of my career working one-on-one with woodland owners, while so often timber is what's associated with woodlands, there's a lot of woodland owners out there. And I would have to say, as a woodland owner myself, I'm one of those that timber isn't at the top of my management goals and objectives. Yes, I'm going to manage for timber in that there's a lifespan for our trees, and if you want to regenerate a new forest, you're going to have to do some work in the woods, whether that's just cutting trees or whether that's harvesting trees. Even if you're a wildlife person, cutting trees is one of the main tools to trying to create habitat for wildlife. So I'm used to working with woodland owners that, yes, timber may be on the list, but it's not what drives them. But they're looking for, as property taxes come up and they're trying to keep their woodlands, they're looking for income
opportunities. Does it bring the taxes up or down, or what is the effect of woodland?
If you're managing for woodland and you're in some of the tax law programs like CAUV or forest tax law, brings your property taxes down. But for a lot of woodland owners, it's about looking for some income and not having to necessarily cut trees. And I just think that maple's one of those things that you can get an annual income from. You can still harvest trees. You can still do all that. Makes it a little more challenging with the tubing in the woods and that. But it's an income opportunity for woodland owners. And if it keeps, you know, some of our woodlands in place instead of them disappearing, to me, it's a win-win because they get some money every year. And the nice thing with maple these days is you no longer have to do it all yourself. So there's everything from leasing taps. So if you got 1,100 taps, someone may lease those taps for $1, $1.50 a tap. So there's $1,100 plus that you could get out of that woods every year. You can work out whatever, you know, deal that you want. You could collect your own sap and sell the sap. You could, you can build a sugar house if you want to invest that kind of money and do it all yourself. So there's, I think a lot of folks, when they think about doing maple, they think, oh, you know, buckets and I got to haul all that and then we're going to have to boil it. And you really, you've got opportunities along a continuum now as a woodland owner to do as much or as little as you want and get some income. And I think for some landowners, that could be huge just because every little bit helps, you know, when you're trying to maintain a farm or whatever and you need just a little bit more income. So for me, that's, as a forester, it's one of those things that we don't promote heavily with us foresters. Sometimes some of my colleagues and, you know, we argue about it a lot. I always say, put seven of us in the same woods, you won't get the same management plan out of the
any of us. Which is good, of course.
Right.
You know, this is just an opinion piece from Mr. Josh Steffen, but, you know, it is so myopic that we look at, I come from a permaculture type focus, which is, I don't know if you might have noticed from my two questions that I submitted, but there are so many different yields that we should and could be pulling off of the woods, you know, from ancient times. We were certainly more tied to the needs of the woods, but that we could be going back to and discover new ways, you know. So this view of just timber.
Right.
You know, just the wood is so limiting from what forests can and are providing.
Right.
You know, so.
You know, and
I know I'm preaching to the choir.
But for some of the tax programs, you know, you're required to manage for commercial timber sale, and you can still do that and do this other stuff.
Oh, absolutely.
And so it's not limiting that if I want to do that, I can't do this. And I think that's where we lose.
Well, but some of the challenges that we, like, just tree spacing when they're doing plantations, right? They're setting it up strictly for a one type of yield.
Yeah.
Right. And so it goes back to the design of the lot and how you're foresting. And unfortunately, that there are downsides ecologically if you're trying to create these other, you know, yields. And so... That's part of the, it's back to design.
Right. Yeah. Right. So that for me is why maple, I think, is something that, I mean, I was a little hesitant to jump into this at Mansfield, you know, it's something else on your plate. Do I really have time to do this? But yet I'm very passionate about the fact that woodland owners need options, and it can't be just about selling timber. And we've sold timber off of our 80 acres, I think, 3 times now. We had to do the third one heavy because of all the dead ash. And again, it was a sale that was done for other purposes because there was a lot of it probably that wouldn't have sold, but it was going to die or decay and make the woods unsafe to be in. And so there's a lot of things that impact what landowners want to do. And I like the idea of having something that they have this continuum of involvement in, right. And can get some income for the property.
I think it would be an interesting podcast, another idea, right, to explore different types of products that can come off of woodlands other than just timber. You know, medicine, obviously, I mean, nut production, for one. I mean, nuts are way undervalued in terms of nutrition. And so the more diverse you're pulling off, that you're gonna manage your woodlands differently.
Right.
Right. That's kind of the point. And having that added to the mix, you're less likely to clear cut and actually create multi-class forests. And that's another Google word for your listeners.
Yeah. And
we're not giving you all the answers to what these terms are. You got to go look them up.
So. Yeah, since you're sort of a permaculture guy, Josh, I assume you know what a food forest is.
Yeah, I do. Was that one of my questions I had?
I don't think so. Mm-mm. But like I've heard
That's kind of where I'm going, right? In general, is looking at forests for a whole lot more, asking actually of more of our forests than we have traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
So that we're actually we manage what we care about. And money matters, right? So, I would imagine we would be a lot better at our forest management if we were looking to it for a lot more than what we're asking currently.
Yeah,
food forest—that's another concept you're gonna have to go look up. But
go look that up. It's really cool though. It's like a multi-stage garden.
Yeah. It's exactly it.
And it's food above. Right. At eye level, below.
I mean, yeah, it's you know, forests are the second most. You could correct me if I'm wrong. Savannas are the most bio rich production in terms of biomass ecosystems in the world. So grass and tree combinations. The next is of course your forests. So your forests have a great ability to harvest energy from the sun at all those different levels and using it and utilizing it in all those different ways. And so you're capturing that, right, in all kinds of different products. And food forests is not actually a permaculture kind. They just glommed onto it and went crazy with it. You know, ancient cultures have been using it for a long time.
Our Rich Land is a production of Richland Soil and Water Conservation District in Mansfield, Ohio. Our district...
Ugh. That too.
Our director is Erica Thomas. Our public relations coordinator is Teresa Suter. She's actually standing right next to me.
Actually, she is just everywhere, omnipresent.
Our part-time editor and fact-checker on occasion is Jordan Keller. We are your hosts, Evan Stern and...
Josh Steffen.
Take it away.
Oh, all right, right. To learn more about what you've heard today. We ask Kathy to provide us for some to learn more about what you heard today, we ask Kathy for some links to share. According to the script, that's what it says we did. And she shared a lot. We only scratched the surface, or should we say tapped the vast resources available to you. Check out the show notes for links on the Ohio Maple Producers Association and the Ohio State Maple blog, as well as numerous national resources. Also included is the link to OSU's Woodland Stewards website, where you can browse through classes, workshops, and publications on an abundance of woodland management topics. There is even a tab, or should I say tap, on the website for OSU Mansfield Maple Research. You can find all of that at woodlandstewards.osu.edu. That's woodlandstewards.osu.edu.
And for more on Richland Soil and Water Conservation District's numerous events and programs, or to sign up for an event you heard about in today's podcast, please visit our website in the show notes or search richlandswcd.net.
Also in the show notes. Just in case you can't follow that.
Right.
Please also go check out the Kingwood Center Gardens. I've heard of this place. It sounds amazing.
Yeah.
where Josh is the presiding director. Overlord, apparently, or something. Why did you put presiding director in there? Okay. Must have been on the thesaurus on Word. You can check out what they've got by following the links. It's kingwoodcenter.org. We always got something going on every time of the year. So it's pretty good stuff.
Is there anything currently going on?
Oh, there is. But you had to come check out the website to know what's there. Oh,
okay, okay.
I mean, just in case, you know, this error, that people want to hear it later, it doesn't date the program.
That's true.
Okay.
If you like what you heard today, please consider donating to Richland Soil and Water Conservation District to support this and other soil and water programs. Our contact info is also in the show notes, as with everything else, so you can learn how. Thanks for listening.
We should call the show notes the dumping ground.
The dumping ground.
Yeah. It's just where we put everything.
It's the boneyard.
It's the dumping ground. For all our lazy lack of research, we just put a bunch of links. There it is.
There it is.
All right. Wasn't that fun?
Kathy Smith will be back in part two of our conversation on maple syrup production and effective woodland management.